Hello. This is the Pearson EdExcel International GCSE English as a Second Language, Paper 2 Listening Test, Summer 2015. This test is in three parts. You will hear three extracts and will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the beginning of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all three parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. In this part, you will hear the principal of a school talking about the arrangements for moving to new school buildings. Listen and complete the notes. Write no more than three words for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each completed answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Good morning, everyone. As you're aware, we move into our new school building shortly, and I'd like to take this opportunity to give you an update on the arrangements for the next few weeks and months. So, please note down the details that follow. There have been rumours that the move has been postponed until after Christmas. However, I want to confirm that we will start moving into the new buildings after the half-term break. Any other information you've heard about the date of the move is completely false. So, on the first day of the second half of term, all students are expected to attend school as normal. The only people this does not apply to are years 10 and 11 students who are doing the Working Skills programme. You'll be given separate instructions about attendance by your heads of year, Mrs. Stiles and Mr. Johnson. On that day, can everyone else please use the entrance on College Road and go directly to the central courtyard? This'll be the only point of access from then on. There'll be no route available through the old entrance on Bank Street, as this area of the school grounds will be a construction site. The usual breakfast provision will be available in the dining room from 8 a.m. The current method of payment, a fingerprint recognition, won't operate in the new buildings. Instead, you'll each be issued with a plastic smart card which holds all your personal details. This'll give you access to the catering and library services, although for the time being, all colour printing will need to be paid for in cash. The card will also carry information about your lunchtime arrangements and any medical condition where relevant. We'll start issuing these cards in the next few weeks. They'll come with a plastic wallet and must be kept in your blazer pocket at all times. We'll be sending your parents, guardians and carers details of how to top up these new cards in next week's newsletter. Moving into the new buildings means that there'll be some changes, as just mentioned. However, we intend to maintain continuity as much as possible. For example, the timetable won't change apart from the allocation of new rooms, and you won't change class sets or teachers, and the times of lessons won't change either. The start and finish times for the school day will also remain the same. At the very start of the rebuilding programme, we asked you for your thoughts, and many of you emphasised the need for lockers. These have been installed, but unfortunately, we don't have enough to allow one for each student. We've therefore decided to have a scheme where brothers and sisters use the same locker. If this applies to you, you'll each be given a key, and if one of you leaves yours at home, you'll still be able to gain access to your locker. Locker numbers and keys will be allocated next Thursday and can be collected from the management office next to reception. You'll need to bring along a £5 deposit, which will not be returned if the key is lost. When we move into the new buildings next month, this will be the end of stage one of the building programme. The project won't actually be finished until next April. So, let me tell you a bit about stage two. As soon as we've moved into the new buildings, the old buildings will be pulled down. Construction will start on new parking facilities and the development of a sports pitch with an all-weather surface as well as floodlights. In the final stage, we intend to build a sports centre on the site, but this hasn't been finalised and won't happen for a few years yet. Stage two will have an effect on drop-off and pick-up at the start and end of school. We're in the process of organising a few more visitor parking spaces, but in the event that these are unavailable, we will ask all visitors to the school, including parents, to park on Castle Street. During busy times, please do not ask your parents to drop you off at the turning circle, as this will be restricted to buses and taxis. In fact, it would ease congestion a lot if they dropped you off at the bottom end of Castle Street until stage two is finished. This is certainly an exciting time for all of us as we move.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Good morning, everyone. As you're aware, we move into our new school building shortly, and I'd like to take this opportunity to give you an update on the arrangements for the next few weeks and months. So, please note down the details that follow. There have been rumours that the move has been postponed until after Christmas. However, I want to confirm that we will start moving into the new buildings after the half-term break. Any other information you've heard about the date of the move is completely false. So, on the first day of the second half of term, all students are expected to attend school as normal. The only people this does not apply to are Years 10 and 11 students, who are doing the Working Skills programme. You'll be given separate instructions about attendance by your heads of year, Mrs. Stiles, and Mr. Johnson. On that day, can everyone else please use the entrance on College Road and go directly to the central courtyard? This'll be the only point of access from then on. There'll be no route available through the old entrance on Bank Street, as this area of the school grounds will be a construction site. The usual breakfast provision will be available in the dining room from 8 a.m. The current method of payment, a fingerprint recognition, won't operate in the new buildings. Instead, you'll each be issued with a plastic smart card which holds all your personal details. This'll give you access to the catering and library services, although for the time being, all colour printing will need to be paid for in cash. The card will also carry information about your lunchtime arrangements and any medical condition where relevant. We'll start issuing these cards in the next few weeks. They'll come with a plastic wallet and must be kept in your blazer pocket at all times. We'll be sending your parents, guardians and carers details of how to top up these new cards in next week's newsletter. Moving into the new buildings means that there'll be some changes, as just mentioned. However, we intend to maintain continuity as much as possible. For example, the timetable won't change apart from the allocation of new rooms, and you won't change class sets or teachers, and the times of lessons won't change either. The start and finish times for the school day will also remain the same. At the very start of the rebuilding programme, we asked you for your thoughts, and many of you emphasised the need for lockers. These have been installed, but unfortunately, we don't have enough to allow one for each student. We've therefore decided to have a scheme where brothers and sisters use the same locker. If this applies to you, you'll each be given a key, and if one of you leaves yours at home, you'll still be able to gain access to your locker. Locker numbers and keys will be allocated next Thursday and can be collected from the management office next to reception. You'll need to bring along a £5 deposit, which will not be returned if the key is lost. When we move into the new buildings next month, this will be the end of stage one of the building programme. The project won't actually be finished until next April. So, let me tell you a bit about stage two. As soon as we've moved into the new buildings, the old buildings will be pulled down. Construction will start on new parking facilities and the development of a sports pitch with an all-weather surface as well as floodlights. In the final stage, we intend to build a sports centre on the site, but this hasn't been finalised and won't happen for a few years yet. Stage 2 will have an effect on drop-off and pick-up at the start and end of school. We're in the process of organising a few more visitor parking spaces, but in the event that these are unavailable, we will ask all visitors to the school, including parents, to park on Castle Street. During busy times, please do not ask your parents to drop you off at the turning circle, as this will be restricted to buses and taxis. In fact, it would ease congestion a lot if they dropped you off at the bottom end of Castle Street until stage two is finished. This is certainly an exciting time for all of us as we move.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part two. In this part, you will hear a conversation between two friends, Jamie and Emma, discussing their next holiday. Listen and answer the questions. For questions 11 to 15, indicate your answer by marking a cross in the box. If you change your mind, put a line through the box and then indicate your answer with a cross. For questions 16 to 20, complete the sentences. Write no more than two words. One mark will be awarded for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hi, Jamie. Thanks for waiting.
That's okay, Emma. How are you?
Not bad, thanks. So, how far have we got with this holiday next August?
We still have loads to sort out, which is why we needed to get together today. Let's see. There are four of us going to Austria. You, me, your brother Mike, and my cousin Jane. Those two are good friends, so it should work well.
Yeah. I think that's a good number. There were too many of us on our last holiday.
I agree. It was full on and I came back exhausted. So, as discussed, we'll spend a week visiting the South, followed by a week with some Austrian family friends of mine in Vienna.
That all sounds good. What about getting there?
Well, I think we should fly to Vienna, hire a car, and drive to the lakes in the South, drive back to the airport and fly home.
Yeah, or we could take a coach all the way. That would be the cheapest option.
And the slowest, and the least convenient.
Sure, but we need to consider keeping costs down. What about taking our own car?
Now that's an idea. I'll do some costing on that and get back to you.
Okay. So let's think about our stay in the South. The others have mentioned staying on one of the campsites by the lakes.
Well, I'm all for that if the weather's good, but I'd rather be somewhere more comfortable. The hotels are expensive in Austria, and so are apartments, but the hostels are reasonable. They often have larger rooms for small groups.
But the campsites are usually right on the lake, and I'm sure we could find ones with cabins. They might fit the bill.
That's worth considering, especially if the location is good. Okay, we'll need to think about this more.
So, what do we want to do at the lakes? Jane's a bit of a fitness freak, and I don't think she'll be into lazing around. I know she's planning to hire a bike.
That's fine with me. I certainly want to get some hiking in, as the mountains are beautiful at that time of year.
And I'd like to do some sailing and windsurfing. And Mike wants to do a bit of cultural stuff, such as castles and museums.
Well, I'm sure we can cater for everyone, although I know that Jane isn't one for castles.
Unless we can combine them with a long walk.
That would be okay. So, is there anything else about this first week?
Don't forget, we need to do some research on food and restaurants. Three of the group are vegetarian, and Mike is also a bit picky about where he eats.
Tell me about it. So I'm the only meat eater on the trip, but that's not a problem. I'm fairly easy about all that.
Good. Well, that's about as far as we can go on this first week of the trip. What about the second week?
We'll be staying with my friends in Vienna. They live right in the centre of the city, so it's really convenient.
I'd like to take them something. Any ideas?
That would be nice. Let me think. You could get something for their house, I suppose, or something for the children.
I was thinking more in terms of something edible. Something traditional that tourists to this country often take home with them. What about biscuits or some jam?
Yeah, that would go down well. They have quite a sweet tooth, particularly the children. As for our visit, I've got to know Vienna quite well.
So what do you have in mind? It'll be my first time there.
I think we should take a sightseeing tour early on to get an idea of the place. We can take a tram, boat or bike trip. Oh, or a bus tour. No, actually, I think a river cruise would be the one to go for, as I've heard it's really good.
Okay, then. I'll go along with that.
I know Jane won't be thrilled, but we absolutely must visit one of the palaces. The architecture is fantastic and well worth spending a day on.
I'm sure she won't mind.
There's also a really famous amusement park where we could go one day. As well as a big wheel, it's got roller coasters, and there's a huge nature park in the middle of it. And there's also a planetarium.
Just don't expect me to go on any of the rides. As you know, I can't stand heights or anything like that. I'll be keeping my feet firmly on the ground.
Oh yes, I'd forgotten about that. But you still want to go?
Sure, no problem. Don't worry about it. I'll just watch you.
Okay. About food. We really should try some of the local food during our time in Vienna. Coffee and cakes, of course. We could invite my friends along for that.
Yes, that's definitely a good idea.
And I've heard that there's this really great market. It originally sold flowers, fruit and vegetables, but it's getting a name for its international cuisine, which I really think we should try out whilst we're there. You can find local dishes there as well, of course, but that's not what it's well known for.
Now that sounds a great place to go. Let's definitely do that.
Fine.
Oh yes, I just want to find out something. A friend of mine has asked me to bring her something back from Austria. I'm at a bit of a loss as to what to get her.
I tend to get wafer biscuits or chocolates. They usually go down well. Perhaps we could look for something when we are in Vienna.
Not sure about them. I don't think she likes sweet stuff. She never eats anything remotely unhealthy.
Well, how about those glass ornaments the country is famous for?
Now that's a good idea. Okay, let's look for them when we're there.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Hi, Jamie. Thanks for waiting.
That's okay, Emma. How are you?
Not bad, thanks. So, how far have we got with this holiday next August?
We still have loads to sort out, which is why we needed to get together today. Let's see. There are four of us going to Austria. You, me, your brother Mike, and my cousin Jane. Those two are good friends, so it should work well.
Yeah. I think that's a good number. There were too many of us on our last holiday.
I agree. It was full on and I came back exhausted. So, as discussed, we'll spend a week visiting the south, followed by a week with some Austrian family friends of mine in Vienna.
That all sounds good. What about getting there?
Well, I think we should fly to Vienna, hire a car and drive to the lakes in the south, drive back to the airport and fly home.
Yeah, or we could take a coach all the way. That would be the cheapest option.
And the slowest, and the least convenient.
Sure, but we need to consider keeping costs down. What about taking our own car?
Now that's an idea. I'll do some costing on that and get back to you.
Okay. So let's think about our stay in the south. The others have mentioned staying on one of the campsites by the lakes.
Well, I'm all for that if the weather's good, but I'd rather be somewhere more comfortable. The hotels are expensive in Austria, and so are apartments, but the hostels are reasonable. They often have larger rooms for small groups.
But the campsites are usually right on the lake, and I'm sure we could find ones with cabins. They might fit the bill.
That's worth considering, especially if the location is good. Okay, we'll need to think about this more.
So, what do we want to do at the lakes? Jane's a bit of a fitness freak, and I don't think she'll be into lazing around. I know she's planning to hire a bike.
That's fine with me. I certainly want to get some hiking in, as the mountains are beautiful at that time of year.
And I'd like to do some sailing and windsurfing. And Mike wants to do a bit of cultural stuff, such as castles and museums.
Well, I'm sure we can cater for everyone, although I know that Jane isn't one for castles.
Unless we can combine them with a long walk.
That would be okay. So, is there anything else about this first week?
Don't forget, we need to do some research on food and restaurants. Three of the group are vegetarian, and Mike is also a bit picky about where he eats.
Tell me about it. So I'm the only meat eater on the trip, but that's not a problem. I'm fairly easy about all that.
Good. Well, that's about as far as we can go on this first week of the trip. What about the second week?
We'll be staying with my friends in Vienna. They live right in the centre of the city, so it's really convenient.
I'd like to take them something. Any ideas?
That would be nice. Let me think. You could get something for their house, I suppose, or something for the children.
I was thinking more in terms of something edible. Something traditional that tourists to this country often take home with them. What about biscuits or some jam?
Yeah, that would go down well. They have quite a sweet tooth, particularly the children. As for our visit, I've got to know Vienna quite well.
So what do you have in mind? It'll be my first time there.
I think we should take a sightseeing tour early on to get an idea of the place. We can take a tram, boat or bike trip. Oh, or a bus tour. No, actually, I think a river cruise would be the one to go for, as I've heard it's really good.
Okay, then. I'll go along with that.
I know Jane won't be thrilled, but we absolutely must visit one of the palaces. The architecture is fantastic and well worth spending a day on.
I'm sure she won't mind.
There's also a really famous amusement park where we could go one day. As well as a big wheel, it's got roller coasters, and there's a huge nature park in the middle of it. And there's also a planetarium.
Just don't expect me to go on any of the rides. As you know, I can't stand heights or anything like that. I'll be keeping my feet firmly on the ground.
Oh, yes. I'd forgotten about that. But you still want to go?
Sure. No problem. Don't worry about it. I'll just watch you.
Okay. About food, we really should try some of the local food during our time in Vienna. Coffee and cakes, of course. We could invite my friends along for that.
Yes, that's definitely a good idea.
And I've heard that there's this really great market. It originally sold flowers, fruit and vegetables, but it's getting a name for its international cuisine, which I really think we should try out whilst we're there. You can find local dishes there as well, of course, but that's not what it's well known for.
Now that sounds a great place to go. Let's definitely do that.
Fine.
Oh yes, I just want to find out something. A friend of mine has asked me to bring her something back from Austria. I'm at a bit of a loss as to what to get her.
I tend to get wafer biscuits or chocolates. They usually go down well. Perhaps we could look for something when we are in Vienna.
Not sure about them. I don't think she likes sweet stuff. She never eats anything remotely unhealthy.
Well, how about those glass ornaments the country is famous for?
Now that's a good idea. Okay, let's look for them when we're there.
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear an extract from a radio programme about farms of the future. Listen and complete the sentences. Write no more than three words for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Half the world's population lives in urban areas, towns and cities, in other words. They occupy only 2% of the world's land, but use 75% of the world's resources. That's a lot of people in a small space consuming a great deal. It also means that the places where food is produced to feed city dwellers are usually located far away from where they live. High transportation costs are leading to ever-increasing food prices, and specialists are now thinking about how to move farms closer to the city and grow food where it is needed. One initiative is vertical farming. The idea is to build huge glass skyscrapers in the heart of the city, where different fruits and vegetables are grown on each floor. The plants are not grown in soil, but in a controlled environment, which uses only water and liquid minerals. Both of these are recycled, and the only thing to leave the building is the food. These recycling techniques mean that very little water is needed compared to conventional farming, and the problems associated with agricultural waste products are kept to a minimum. The idea of farming in cities is not new. Experts are already looking at something called urban farming. This is where the roofs of buildings in cities are utilized to grow food. However, the area available for this is small, and some scientists believe that we urgently need to scale up production in order to be able to feed the billions of people who will soon be living in cities. The concept of indoor farming is not new either. Certain vegetables, such as peppers, as well as a wide variety of herbs, have been produced in hothouses for more than a century. And in certain parts of the world, plants are grown using only liquids. One such place is Antarctica, where a system has been in operation since 2004. Here, food is grown in a large chamber, which provides the 65 staff of the South Pole Station with at least one bowl of salad a day during the winter months, when extreme weather makes it impossible to supply the base with fresh food. The growing system is efficient, but it does require artificial lighting, because the station is without natural daylight for most of the winter. And this can be one of the problems of vertical farming. If the system does not have access to natural sunlight, the food becomes incredibly expensive. This was highlighted in an experiment which was conducted in New York over a period of 3 years. It aimed to find out how economical it was to grow large quantities of food in the center of the city. Plants were grown in a single-story greenhouse, which was placed on a boat on the Hudson River. It was generally found that it was an efficient system until they started to build more levels on top of the greenhouse. Then the plants grew unevenly, because the ones nearest the windows were exposed to more light and grew more quickly. This means that light has to be very tightly controlled in order to produce high-quality food. Although there are drawbacks to vertical farming, there are some parts of the world where it may seem attractive. For example, regions that have limited water resources, such as certain countries in the Middle East. This type of farming would allow them to be more self-sufficient in food production. Other places where there is very little land for agriculture, such as Singapore, would also see the benefits of vertical farming. And it is here that you can find a successful example of it in action. Singapore has one of the highest population densities in the world. More than 5 million people are crowded into this island city. Located near the equator, it has high levels of sunlight throughout the year. Land is expensive, and this has forced people to expand upwards rather than outwards. With just 250 acres of farmland left, the city grows only 7% of its own vegetables, and the rest has to be imported. One company, City Greens, was set up 3 years ago. It has built 120 towers of aluminium and glass, which are all 4 stories high. Each tower can grow up to 500 kilos of vegetables at a time. Its director, David Chan, is an engineer who has created a highly efficient internal system with very little waste. He has also been able to overcome the problem of uneven plant growth by placing the plants on a system of trays which go round and round in a circle, much like a water wheel. Throughout the day, the plants move from the liquid at the bottom to the sun above. In this way, all the plants are exposed to similar amounts of sunlight and grow at the same rate. He also uses a very cheap method to move these trays around, which costs about the same as the amount of electricity used in a single light bulb. This has helped to reduce production costs, but his vegetables are still a bit more expensive than imported ones. In Singapore, it is a monumental task supplying food to the nation. Hundreds of trucks arrive in the city each day, providing more than 90% of the country's food. This makes City Green's products a novelty for some people, but they are willing to pay a bit more for these homegrown organic products.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Half the world's population lives in urban areas, towns and cities, in other words. They occupy only 2% of the world's land, but use 75% of the world's resources. That's a lot of people in a small space consuming a great deal. It also means that the places where food is produced to feed city dwellers are usually located far away from where they live. High transportation costs are leading to ever-increasing food prices, and specialists are now thinking about how to move farms closer to the city and grow food where it is needed. One initiative is vertical farming. The idea is to build huge glass skyscrapers in the heart of the city, where different fruits and vegetables are grown on each floor. The plants are not grown in soil, but in a controlled environment, which uses only water and liquid minerals. Both of these are recycled, and the only thing to leave the building is the food. These recycling techniques mean that very little water is needed compared to conventional farming, and the problems associated with agricultural waste products are kept to a minimum. The idea of farming in cities is not new. Experts are already looking at something called urban farming. This is where the roofs of buildings in cities are utilized to grow food. However, the area available for this is small, and some scientists believe that we urgently need to scale up production in order to be able to feed the billions of people who will soon be living in cities. The concept of indoor farming is not new either. Certain vegetables, such as peppers, as well as a wide variety of herbs, have been produced in hothouses for more than a century. And in certain parts of the world, plants are grown using only liquids. One such place is Antarctica, where a system has been in operation since 2004. Here, food is grown in a large chamber, which provides the 65 staff of the South Pole Station with at least one bowl of salad a day during the winter months, when extreme weather makes it impossible to supply the base with fresh food. The growing system is efficient, but it does require artificial lighting, because the station is without natural daylight for most of the winter. And this can be one of the problems of vertical farming. If the system does not have access to natural sunlight, the food becomes incredibly expensive. This was highlighted in an experiment which was conducted in New York over a period of 3 years. It aimed to find out how economical it was to grow large quantities of food in the center of the city. Plants were grown in a single-story greenhouse, which was placed on a boat on the Hudson River. It was generally found that it was an efficient system until they started to build more levels on top of the greenhouse. Then the plants grew unevenly, because the ones nearest the windows were exposed to more light and grew more quickly. This means that light has to be very tightly controlled in order to produce high-quality food. Although there are drawbacks to vertical farming, there are some parts of the world where it may seem attractive. For example, regions that have limited water resources, such as certain countries in the Middle East. This type of farming would allow them to be more self-sufficient in food production. Other places where there is very little land for agriculture, such as Singapore, would also see the benefits of vertical farming. And it is here that you can find a successful example of it in action. Singapore has one of the highest population densities in the world. More than 5 million people are crowded into this island city. Located near the equator, It has high levels of sunlight throughout the year. Land is expensive, and this has forced people to expand upwards rather than outwards. With just 250 acres of farmland left, the city grows only 7% of its own vegetables, and the rest has to be imported. One company, City Greens, was set up 3 years ago. It has built 120 towers of aluminium and glass, which are all 4 stories high. Each tower can grow up to 500 kilos of vegetables at a time. Its director, David Chan, is an engineer who has created a highly efficient internal system with very little waste. He has also been able to overcome the problem of uneven plant growth by placing the plants on a system of trays, which go round and round in a circle, much like a water wheel. Throughout the day, the plants move from the liquid at the bottom to the sun above. In this way, all the plants are exposed to similar amounts of sunlight and grow at the same rate. He also uses a very cheap method to move these trays around, which costs about the same as the amount of electricity used in a single light bulb. This has helped to reduce production costs, but his vegetables are still a bit more expensive than imported ones. In Singapore, it is a monumental task supplying food to the nation. Hundreds of trucks arrive in the city each day, providing more than 90% of the country's food. This makes City Greens' products a novelty for some people, but they are willing to pay a bit more for these homegrown organic products.
That's the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklets to be collected. Thank you, and good luck.